Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie Loftus.
And my name's Caitlin Durante.
And this is our podcast about the representation of women in movies you've seen before, or maybe you haven't.
Yeah. Jamie, how do you feel the representation of women in mainstream American cinema is?
I'll tell you what, pretty bad.
Yeah, I would agree.
Don't care for it. Usually feel it's like a bit of a slap in the face.
For sure. And that conversation just passed the Bechdel test, which is the test that we use as just a jumping off point to initiate a larger conversation about the representation of women in movies. Mm-hmm. The Bechdel test for us requires that a movie has two female identifying characters in it. They have to have names.
Ugh.
Already, why bother? Jeez. Those characters have to speak to each other.
If that happens, I'm leaving the theater.
Who wants to watch women talk, right? And their conversation has to be about anything besides men.
So what are they talking about? Food?
There's nothing else to talk about. Right. No. So.
Here, let's beta test the test really quick.
I'd love to.
Hey, Caitlin.
Hey. Hey, Jamie.
You play any sports?
I do play soccer.
Whoa, I played soccer when I was 4, but then I got kicked off of a youth team, which isn't supposed to be allowed to happen to 4-year-olds.
Right.
But I...
What did you do to get kicked off the team?
Quote, refused to participate, unquote.
I see.
And quote, picked flowers, and quote, threw them at the opposing team, which I would argue was probably helpful to my team, and they should have let me stay.
I think but that is...
Poor sport.
Right, maybe some poor sportsmanship.
Yeah.
Oh, you said man, so it doesn't count.
Well, we'll do better next time. Sorry, we're just dumb women. All right, shall we introduce our guest?
Yes, please. She's a comedian and she's a writer for the Jim Jeffries show, Subha Agarwal.
Hey.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So we're talking about Bend It Like Beckham. Tell us about your history with this movie, your relationship to it. When did you first see it?
I think I was young. Mm. I don't remember exactly when, but it was very relatable. I loved it. It was like, I think it was the first, because like when I was little, the only other brown girl I really saw was like, well, of course there's Bollywood films, but I had no idea what the hell was going on there. And then there was Princess Jasmine. And when I was super little, I thought I was a princess because I saw Jasmine and my dad would call me princess. Mm-hmm. And then all of our white school teachers called my house and were like, is your daughter really a princess? And my dad was like, no. Soup's embarrassing.
That's adorable, though.
That's great.
I was like, that's the only other problem.
You could have just leaned into it. Be like, yeah.
He just doesn't want people to know. But
that's great.
They're trying to murder me because I'm going to inherit the throne. No. I think we were merchants, was our cast. I don't know. But like, So, yeah, I saw Bennett like Beckham. I absolutely adored it because it kind of became my life story with the whole entire double life thing with me and stand-up. Where it's like my parents took me to my first ever open mic, and then they forbade me from doing comedy. And then I would sneak out and say I was going to parties and like go out and do shows and stuff. So it was very Bennett like Beckham.
They were cool with parties, but not
well, you have to understand who my friends were.
Oh, okay.
I was such a loser. This is completely true. I got into comedy because I thought it would teach me how to talk to people.
Oh, I'm a monster.
It worked. No, just even weirder. Just wrong direction.
Yeah, I think I've gotten way socially worse since I started doing stand-up.
Hey, now I talk, but everything I say is inappropriate. Perfect.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's more complicated than that, but... So, my friends, this is true. I was so awkward and so nerdy that the people who took me into their friend circle was this Korean church youth group at my school.
Yeah.
Because they saw me. And it was like adopting a stray dog.
Adopted
and
they adopted
like,
you?
Yeah, they took me into their group and they like let me come to their like youth group Friday. So it's like, yeah, we would go real crazy. We would do karaoke and like go to a hay patch.
You were their project. You were their project.
So those That's were the sweet. Parties that you told your parents you were going to and instead you were going out and doing stand-up. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is really Bend It Like Beckham. Yeah. Except I think I like that better than the movie.
Jamie, when did you first see the movie?
I'm pretty sure I first saw this movie. I definitely didn't see it when it first came out. I would have been too young to see it. But I saw it at some point in high school. I think that a bunch of my friends and I watched it. And it would have probably been because we knew by that point who Keira Knightley was. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, oh, Keira Knightley's in this movie. We'll watch it. And yeah, I really liked it. I've seen it a couple times over the years. And it's always been just like, I don't know. I was a little bit worried, as I always am anytime we rewatch a movie with this like lens. I was a little bit worried going into it because I didn't remember all the details quite. And usually when that happens, it means that I'm about to not love the movie anymore. It's going to make me very upset.
Yeah.
But this movie held up for me. I thought it just warms my heart to be like, the movie still bangs. It's great.
Right. It's very rare that we revisit a movie after having been doing this podcast for a while and are able to still enjoy a movie. So.
Yeah, without like that weird feeling of like, but asterisk, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So it came out in 2002. I think I saw it shortly after it came out. I would have been in high school at the time, and I was really at the top of my soccer career in that moment. I was a captain of my soccer team.
Brag.
I know.
Sporty.
I was a left forward. I was scoring goals all the time.
What does left forward mean? Is that just...
I played an offensive position.
So like... Upstage. put it in drama.
They're closer to the half line.
I would.
Oh, okay. So, like,
I would enter the field, stage left. field left, and I would hit my mark. And yeah, so I'm a huge soccer fan. And so I kind of just automatically liked this movie because it was about women playing soccer. Mm-hmm. It was around a time in my life where I was like really gung ho about soccer. And you could argue that I still am, because right after this, I'm going to play soccer in Pasadena. So, Yeah, so I really enjoyed this movie at the time and then would watch it here and there. I haven't seen it that many times.
I loved soccer, too. I wanted
Did
to
you
be,
play?
I tried.
Uh-huh. Really?
I wanted to be a professional soccer player, but my health and my genetics got in the way. And it's like, so sorry. Did you think you were going to do soccer? You're going to do math. I'm sorry about that.
You're physically suited to math.
Your bones are shaped for this wheel and desk. That is what your bones are shaped for.
I mean, make no mistake, I'm not good at soccer. I've been playing for over 25 years, so I should be much better than I am, and I'm literally still very bad at
it. Well, my problem was I was fat when I was little, and then when you're fat and they don't know what they're doing, they just make you the goalie. They're like, well, she doesn't move. And I would get so mad that they would put me in goalie because I knew it's like, I'm like, this is because I'm fat. And then like I stopped. I refused to play goalie, and I started playing these positions. But by the time, like, my school was very competitive, so it was like really hard to get on the team.
Yeah.
And I started working out and I jogged and I lost all this weight. And like I ended up like
For soccer.
Like Well for soccer, and I was also tired of, you know, not being fuckable in the 90s.
Sure.
Like now it's better, but it's just like, now I'm sure there'd be a dude who's like, yeah, you don't have to look like that. I'm totally into you. But you know, back then, nope. But like,
yeah, I mean, when you're teen in the 90s, it's
So yeah, I lost all this weight. I started jogging. I started working out and training really hard, and I could not catch up. I still couldn't make it. But I was like, well, I guess at least I'm not gonna die of a heart attack at 30. I guess I'll just be healthy and do math and hate my life.
I was told I was once perfectly physically built to play the oboe. Because I, like, when I had a back brace, I went to my oboe instructor, and I thought he was going to tell me to quit, because I'm like, I have to wear a back brace all the time. How am I supposed to? And he's like, you don't understand what a blessing this is. And
that's so
funny. He said
that
the way I was leaning, like, my crooked spine was leaning on my lung in such a way that was very advantageous to oboe playing. So, not to brag, but it was a gift.
So we've got an athlete, a musician, and a mathematician. We are basically
the three most fuckable people in the entire world.
Yeah. So I'll do the recap.
Recap it up, baby.
Okay, so Bend It Like Beckham. The movie focuses on a character named Jess Bamra. She is a young woman living in England with her family, and her parents are immigrants. They're Indian, and they're this very traditional family, and they do not like that Jess plays soccer and loves David Beckham. And then we meet Jules. That's Keira Knightley's character. Her mother's all like, try on these sexy bras. And she's like, I'd rather.
Her mom is fully like calling the manager. White lady mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh, right. And Jules sees Jess playing soccer in the park, and she's like, wow, she's really good. And she goes up to her, and Jules is like, hey, you should like try out for this women's league that I'm on. And Jess is like, am I good enough for this? And she's like, yeah. So
she's like, yes, yes, queen. 2002. Really forward thinking.
So Jess goes and tries out, and she makes the team. Her coach is named Joe, and he's played by Jonathan Rhys Meyers, and he thinks that she's got a lot of potential. But her parents don't want her to play anymore, and like her sister's gearing up to get married, and they're all like stressed out because of that. So
her sister's played by Archie Punjabi, who is my favorite character on The Good Wife.
Oh,
a show that I have seen every episode of and remember could tell you zero things that happened in the entire show. It was like 150 episodes. I have no idea. I love Archie Punjabi. Yeah. I love Alan Cumming. That's all I know about the show. Who was even the lead in that show?
Probably a wife that's good.
Juliana Margulies. Trick question.
Oh, I see. Okay. Good job.
Anyways. Oh, wait. Really quick Alfred Molina mention.
Oh, please.
Chris Noth, a.k.a. Mr. Big, plays the husband in The Good Wife. And Chris Noth, as we all know, is the poor man's Alfred Molina. I said it.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Continue.
I'm glad we got that out there. So Jess has to lie to her parents and like tell them that she's got a job so that she can start playing on this women's league, women's side. I don't know, club soccer.
Right.
They're British and they use words that I don't understand. And then Jules and Jess develop a close friendship, and then they're both interested in their coach, Joe. And
but they don't tell each other for a long time.
Right.
They play it cool.
Or they're only kind of hinting about it, but
I feel like there's a million times where Keira Knightley is like, I don't know. I don't know. Whatever. And Jess is like, okay. You know, Jess plays it way cooler than Keira Knightley. Keira Knightley's spazzing out.
Oh, sure.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I've never played it cool. Not once.
It's really
imagine
hard.
Being chill for even a second. Oh, I can't relate.
So different things happen. Like there's a moment where like Jess and Jules are like kind of laughing and hugging, and like a family friend drives by and they think that Jess is kissing someone. So like they tell her family, and then the wedding gets called off because that's very frowned upon in the community. Jess has to like sneak off to Germany to play a game, and she has her like sister cover for her. But like all this stuff gets revealed that she has been playing, and her parents like forbid her from continuing to play. But then she just keeps at it. She keeps lying. She
just committed to lying.
Yeah. She and Joe almost kiss for a moment, and then like Jess walks in on them, and then that creates some tension between them. Finally, her parents, I think they find out about the Germany trip. And they, like, forbid her from ever playing soccer again.
It gets kind of convoluted because that happens a bunch of different times where it's, like, I think that the big plot points go, like, they think she's gay, they catch her playing soccer. They think she's gay, they catch her playing soccer. They think she's gay, they let her play soccer. Mm-hmm. The movie's over. But it is kind of, like, the same two conflicts that keep sort of manifesting in different ways.
Right. Yeah. So by the end, there is this, like, big tournament game that there's, like, an American scout going to be at who has his eye on both Jess and Jules. But that's the same day of Jess's sister's wedding, which gets
also
back
Jess and
on.
Jules are fighting.
They're fighting over this man.
And we'll get there because I'm like, should he be dating any of these girls? No. Doesn't seem like he should.
Right.
But the movie does not acknowledge that.
What the characters do.
It sort of does, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's off limits, but then they go for it anyway.
But then he's like, JK, I'm not. Like, the reasons I thought he was off limits and the reasons they thought he was off limits were different reasons. I thought it was an age thing, but he's just like, oh, no, I'm your coach. Yeah.
Oh, right, because they're like, meant to be in their late teens, like, about to go to uni.
They're on, like, some, yeah, they're like, it's like summer break.
Well, he looks young too. It's not that creepy.
Like, how is, I hope so.
He could also be like 24 though, so. And they're like 18. I don't know.
I guess, I mean, I don't think laws are being broken. Right. It's just a little weird.
Sure.
Slightly sus.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
My sus meter went off. It's like, I don't know if you should be dating
beep,
them.
Beep. So the final kind of big moment in the story is that she's at her sister's wedding and has decided, well, you know, I can't play soccer anymore because my parents forbid it. But then her dad finally gives her his blessing because he had seen her play in a game and, like, recognizes her talent. So he's like, go off, and if this is going to make you happy, go do it. So she leaves the wedding, goes and plays, like, the second half of this soccer game, scores the winning goal. The scout sees her, and he's like, wow, great, let's send you off to America, you know, the country that loves soccer and that there are so many opportunities for soccer players at.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that.
It was funny.
There's so many times in this movie where characters in the UK are like, we can't play soccer here. We have to go to America in order to, like, make a living at soccer. And it's like, is that might have been true, but also, like, the U.S. like hates soccer
and women athletes
and male athletes. Right.
Yeah, seems like a real blanket lose. Maybe that's the movie being like, we want to get international distribution. Maybe if we just compliment America a bunch of times, they'll be like, okay, well, sure. And that must have worked because we've seen it.
Yeah.
And this movie was financially huge success, $6 million budget, $77 million
box office.
Wow. So they got him.
I'm so jealous of that one part of the movie because our stories are pretty similar with the whole, like, double life, lying, blah, 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 it ruining whatever. And then, like, the part where her dad's like, I saw her and she's so talented. Like, I never got that moment. My mom has never been like, your dick joke was so well crafted that I can't hold you back from the world. It was more of, I'm not going to stop doing this.
So they have come to accept it, but they're not necessarily.
They are not on board. She tries, bless her heart.
Aww. To this day?
Yeah, she does.
Oh, my God.
She even tries, because she won't see, I won't let her into a show. I mean, if she does, maybe one day, but I need a heads up, and it's going to be a whole different set, and it's going to be super annoying. But, like, she tries and watch stuff online, or, like, she tried to watch the Jim Jefferies show, which is very, like, news-based, and she's like, I didn't, like, current events. And then she was like, I tried to watch it while I was folding my laundry, so I tried. I'm like, all right, thanks, Mom.
Thank you, Mom.
Every time she tries, it's just way worse. Like, she tried to watch me. I had like a small non-speaking role on a friend's show, and she's like, why did you look fat and nervous? And I was like, what the
no.
I was like, Ma, I could not look nervous. I didn't have any lines. And what do you mean fat? She's like, she just was like, I meant you're skinnier in real life. And I'm like, what the fuck, lady?
I love it. Your mom sounds like a very chill woman.
She just has no, I mean, I adore it. I think it's really funny because she has no filter. It's like, and it like taught me to be like, I'm still very, I mean, I would like to be less sensitive, but it, what little insensitivity I have to be like, eh, screw it, is like, because my mom has just been talking shit the entire time. I'm like, oh, some weird egg on Twitter wants to call me a whore. I'm like, well, get in line after my mom. Like, it's
right. Yeah. My mom's the ultimate egg. She will come at you. My mom, does your mom ever make comments on like your job?
No, she's been surprisingly supportive from the get-go. She did question whether or not I'd be able to ever make a living at it. And when I did decide to go to grad school to get a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University, I hate to bring it up. I don't know if anyone knows this about me, because I would never mention it. But my mom, she was like, yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea, Caitlin. You already don't use your first film degree. So, like, what are you thinking? And I was like, no, this is really going to work out. And look at me now. We've got a movie podcast.
I was like, wait, I'm trying to draw that. Okay, yeah, yeah. My mom just sometimes will, like, look at something I did or, like, not even the full thing, like an image of it. Mm-hmm. And she'll be like, it's just disgusting. Oh, okay. Your issue with it is that it's disgusting to you. And she's like, it's good and I'm glad people, but I find it disgusting.
That's
like,
so funny.
Cool.
Gotta love our moms.
I love an unfiltered mom.
Yeah. Okay, so the very end of the story is, so she leaves the wedding to go play soccer. She gets recognized as being a very talented player, goes off to the U.S. to play soccer in this, you know, wonderful haven that is this country that loves the sport of soccer and loves female athletes.
But not before a weird last-minute airport kiss.
There's an airport kiss, and her parents, like, finally, she, like, gives this speech, and then her dad kind of is like, yeah, like, we should let her be happy and do what she wants. And then she's like, yeah, I want to, this is like what's going to make me happy. So please let me make this choice. And her family comes around. And then, like, she and Jules make up and they go off to play soccer together, but not before there's a hetero kiss. And then that's pretty much the end of the movie. Let's take a quick break and then we will be right back.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
And we're back. Sorry, I had to go score some goals.
Goal!
At soccer.
Yeah. You can only get 1 point in soccer, right?
At a time?
At a time.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I didn't mean total.
Yeah. One goal it's equals like 1 point.
Quidditch, right?
There is a quaffle. There is a snitch. There are some bludgers. And yeah.
I'm exhausted. I don't want to, like, go right to the end, but the logic of the airport kiss scene, it's so clearly, like, to that I'm just like, oh, they got a note. Like, they got a note that they're like, we gotta see a kiss by the end of the movie. But the logic of that scene is so weird because I feel like based on everything we know about Jess's family in this entire movie, they would not be like, oh, yeah, definitely make out with this guy at the airport. But the guy enters behind the family, and we're to believe the family just doesn't turn around.
Right.
Because this whole scene takes place behind both families, Jess's family and Jules's family, and in front of Jules, where, you know, she and Jess made up, but the reason they were fighting was this guy, and I'm like, it's pretty, like... I was like, Jess, that's a move to just be like, remember this guy who didn't want to fuck you? Bam! Like, I was like that. And then, I don't know. I was just like, the logic of that scene was wild.
It feels very tacked on and like it wasn't given that much thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Where they're just like, oh, well, just everyone who isn't directly involved in the kiss, avert your eyes as if this is something that would happen. It's very weird.
So the first thing I just want to mention about this movie is that it is a movie about an Indian woman directed by an Indian woman.
Woohoo! Get out.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Her name, and I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce it, but it's Gurinder Chadha. She also co-wrote it with another Indian woman and her husband. I don't know if they were married at the time, but yeah, so it's those people involved. It's also several of the producers are Indian, and like the cinematographer is an Asian man. So it's like, we so rarely come across this, because oftentimes if there's a movie that does tell the story of a person who is marginalized,
Scarlett Johansson plays the lead.
And it was directed and produced and written by exclusively straight cis white men.
And the best friend is played by Emma Stone, another person who just simply doesn't know.
Exactly. I think that has a lot. The fact that this movie holds up well, and that's not to say that this movie is perfect, that it doesn't mishandle some things here and there, which we'll get into, but I think the fact that it holds up as well as it does and handles the issues that this movie brings up, because it was made by someone who shares the experience of the character. So,
she directed a lot of films I like. I just said films like I'm fucking a genius. Okay. She's directed Bennett Like Beckham, Bride and Prejudice, and Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging.
Oh.
Which is a book series and a movie I really liked.
Yeah, well, we talked about it on the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants episode,
yeah,
if you recall.
Snogging.
Snogging.
So there you go.
So just keep that in mind, because this is a movie that like explores a lot of different things in terms of like a woman of color coming from a family of immigrants, having to deal with racism, having to deal with sexism, because she's existing mostly in like a straight male white space. There's different things where she's self-conscious about her body, and different things where her family, you know, has a very specific idea of what she should and should not be doing, a very specific idea of who she should and should not be romantically involved with. Mm-hmm. So she's dealing with all of these things, and she, you know, finds herself at the intersection of being a woman, being a person of color, being a female athlete, and just the idea of like femininity and masculinity, and like how people perceive that to relate to sexual identity and like different things like that. So this movie like tackles a lot of really interesting things,
but it's so funny,
and it's funny,
so, like, and it just, yeah, when you, I was like, whoa, it really does tackle all that stuff, but it's so fun to watch. It doesn't feel, I don't know, for me
it doesn't,
no
beat
point,
you over the head with it.
Yeah, it's not,
you just
like
kind of live
it.
Yeah,
it's cool. And also just, oh god, it, watching Jess have to deal with so many things, when you're just like, she's a good kid. She's a good kid. She's, yeah, just trying to pursue an extracurricular. Just leave her alone.
Right. So, yeah, her sort of history is that she has played soccer in a park, mostly with men. I think all of them are Indian men, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. They have, like, a friendly rapport, but they also, like, will make sexist comments to her a lot, where, you know, they talk about, like, her hitting the ball, like, the soccer ball with her chest, and, like, how can you do that when you've got boobs?
Doesn't it hurt?
Yeah. You're just like... And then, like, later...
Yes, but you do it anyway.
Right, yeah. Because we're burning you! Because women have a higher threshold for pain.
later in the story, it's revealed that she has like a burn scar on her leg, which she is ashamed about. And we realize that probably one of the reasons she's ashamed about this is because her mother makes her feel shame about it, because she's like, how can you be showing your legs in front of all these men? Like, you should cover that up. And then, like, the guys who she plays soccer with are like, oh my God, that's disgusting. Like, oh God. And every time she's confronted with anything like that, like any sort of sexism, she challenges it, which is a really nice thing to see. Because usually in movies, a character will say a really horribly sexist thing, and no one's even aware that it was sexist. So the characters just barrel through and it goes unchallenged.
Yeah. At the beginning, watching Jess play soccer with the guys, and like, they were giving her a lot of shit, but it felt like so much in this movie feels so like realistic in ways that teen movies rarely do, where they're being sexist toward her, but you can also, because I'm sure like we've all had this experience, you can also understand why she stays, because they're awful to her, but they also know she's a good player. Mm-hmm. There's where else is she gonna go? Like, there's all of these like dynamics at play where I don't even think that Jess like dislikes those guys, but it's like, if she wants to play at the beginning of the movie, that's the only way she knows how. And so she challenges it and then compartmentalizes it sort of on and off in a way that felt, I don't know, like reminded me of being a teenager in any male dominated teen space. Yeah, you're just like, okay, this is the battle I'm gonna push back on, and this is the one where I'm just gonna pretend I didn't hear anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, because she doesn't have any other options to play until she gets sort of recruited to be on this team, which, like, Keira Knightley's character says, like, oh, they finally let us, like, form a women's side.
And it sounds like Keira Knightley, I think Jules, I think, says, or maybe Joe says this, that it was like Jules was the one who was really, really pushing for
him. Yeah, because he was playing for the men's club and she was hanging around.
Right. And so she just, I like to imagine her like lingering around and then waiting for one of the men to get injured and be like, you're our coach now. Because he couldn't play anymore, so he had to coach. And I think she just like scooped him up and was like, you are my coach now. Yeah. Thank you. This is your new job.
She just purposely Tonya Harding's one of them. I'm so sorry. Your knees are gone.
Well, better coach me and a bunch of other ladies.
There's a bright side. I love that fan theory. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to date her.
Yes.
He's like, you hired someone to bash my knee in.
And she's like, it was never proven.
Keira Knightley galoolied him. She straight up galoolied him.
There is a character among the men that she plays with in the park named Tony, who is a close friend of hers, feminist icon, queer icon, because later in the movie he comes out to her.
I forgot about that.
So did I.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically anytime she's confronted with any sort of misogyny or racism, like there's a moment toward the end when they're playing a game and one of the players on the opposing team calls her like a slur for Pakistani people. Mm-hmm. And then she sort of pushes and kind of comes at the player who did this, and then she gets a red card, and then her coach Joe like yells at her for doing that. And she's like, you don't understand, like, this person like called me a slur. And she's like, well, you wouldn't get it. And he's like, I'm Irish, so I get it. And then that goes unchallenged, and I'm just like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure Irish people in England do experience some sort of prejudice, but
it seemed kind of apples and oranges.
For sure.
Okay. That was like one of the few moments of the movie where I was like, I didn't like how that there, and just the way it played out felt weird and not quite lining up with like what it seemed like the characters would, especially the Joe character, because it makes sense that Jess got angry when that happened, but it didn't make sense to me that if he knew that he would yell at her, because that's not really, it didn't seem like the kind of person he was. And then even after she explained it, he was kind of just like, oh, I'm Irish, we've got to toughen up.
That seems like something a white dude would do to me.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
I mean? I was like, I could see that happening.
Absolutely. I think it just came as a surprise to me that she didn't say like, no, like it's not the same. Like, you're still a white man.
Yeah, weird. I guess when he said that, I think that it was like, and now that issue is resolved.
It's yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like they really talked about it. No. I don't know.
But anyway, so my point is, I really enjoyed seeing any time she experienced, you know, for the most part, racism, sexism, etc., she challenges it. And it's just a really cool thing to see in a movie. I also wanted to talk about the idea of like femininity and how that's an expectation of, like, especially for Jules.
That was interesting for me because that was the one part was not my background at all. It was to an extent where it's like, because the thing was, my dad wanted a boy, and so my mom was like, oh, just treat her like a little dude, it's the same shit. So like, I grew up a tomboy for that reason, because I would watch sports with my dad, I would watch wrestling, I was super aggressive. My brother had my mom's personality where he was very patient and calm, and I was just a lunatic from, like, just came out of the womb an insane person smashing bottles. But like, it was, so it was like me and my dad got along, but as soon as I got close to puberty, my parents tried, obviously they failed, but they were like, you can't talk to men outside of the classroom, you can only talk to them in like an educational setting and about school. Obviously I lied straight to their face right away. Yeah. But like, it was just, and it was like this weird thing where like, I used to like wear baggy overalls, like, and then on top of it I would wear a sports jersey, like that was my MO. And then it wasn't until like, I guess my hormones started kicking in and I wanted attention from men that I was like, ah, shit, I can't dress like you anymore. And then I started like reading like Teen Vogue and like trying to do the face makeup that they told you to do, and it was just god awful.
They were wrong.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They told Teen Vogue you to do pretty weird cool things these days, to your though. Face. It didn't make sense. It did not make sense. God, I used to. I still have like just like all these memories of like a specific issue of Teen Vogue where it like would tell you what shape your body was, and it was like three of like the same shape, and then it was like garbage, like a pile of garbage at the end. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that's me. There I am, feeling seen.
But hey, you play the oboe so well.
It's true. I should have asked my oboe instructor for body image advice. Yeah. He's like, no, you and your crushed lung are dope. Great.
A curvy spine. What you need is an A-line skirt. That is fine.
Exactly. But no, so in like in the first scene that we meet Jules in, like her mother is taking her bra shopping and she keeps saying like, oh, these bras will, you know, boost your cleavage. And like, and then Jules has no interest in presenting as feminine or like, you know, wearing quote unquote girly things or like lacy bras or anything like that. So she goes over to the sports bra section, and this sort of sets up an ongoing struggle between her and her mother throughout the movie, where her mom, you know, wants her to be more feminine, wants her to be girlier, doesn't like that she plays football, but she doesn't like forbid Jules from playing it like Jess's parents do. But she's just like, oh, you know, if you just like dress differently, you know, boys would like you. And Jules, meanwhile, is just like, I don't care about that. Like, I'm going to wear what I want to wear. I don't feel the need to present as super, super feminine in like the clothes I wear and like my hairstyle and things like that.
And it seems like part of the reason Jules's mom puts up with it is because Jules's dad feels so differently, where like Jules's dad is very supportive of Jules playing soccer. I think partially because he really likes soccer. So he's like, oh, yeah, this works out. It's a common interest. And that's, it seems like part of the reason why Jules gets to continue playing in a way that Jess doesn't, because Jess doesn't really have a parental ally until the very end. I'm wondering how you both felt about this, but I felt like the way that Jules's mom forced femininity and I think kind of a very stereotypically hetero form of femininity fed right into like the way that this movie deals with like queer panic, because Jules's mom, it comes up with her, I feel like, almost more so than any other character, and it comes up with a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's a moment at the climax of the movie where Jules's mom gets so upset thinking that Jess and Jules are queer and they're together that she crashes a wedding, which is like, that's bananas. There's the moment where she hears Jess and Jules arguing, and the way the scene is presented, I'm like, is they're actually arguing about a boy, so it's okay. And I like don't love how that's presented, but they're actually arguing over Joe, but there's a lot of like mishearing mishaps in this movie, and Jules's mom thinks they're arguing about their relationship. She goes downstairs and bursts into tears.
Yeah.
And is like freaking out with Jules's dad. That scene I thought was a little bit better. The climactic wedding crasher queer panic scene seemed a little bit out of nowhere, because Jules's mom, in kind of like 2/3 through the movie, is like, actually, I like soccer and I want to understand it and I respect your choices, but then freaks out again. But
right.
So that was a little weird. But but the first time she significantly panics, thinking that Jules is queer, she at least contextualizes it and explains part of the reason why she's so nervous. And she cites George Michael and how George Michael was treated in the media for being gay. And she worries that, and it's a silly example, but the way she explains it does make sense in like panicked mom logic of like, I've seen someone who I like, George Michael, be abused in the media for being gay. And what if that happens to my kid? Mm-hmm. And that sort of, when she said it that way, I was like, okay, that is like a really good move by this movie to contextualize the panic a little bit. She's still wrong, but right. At least we understand a little bit better why.
I also got the sense, though, that that was only part of her reasoning for being so upset by it.
Which we learn later when she yells, get your lesbian feet out of my shoes.
Right. Like, there's still certainly some, like, homophobia there, and it might not be the worst case we've ever seen. But, like, she, regardless, she is very upset by her thinking that she might have a daughter who is a lesbian.
Yeah, and I think she would be upset about that, you know, today. Like, even if, you know, like,
society,
gay people were totally
accepted it. Yeah, she still has her own hangups.
Because get your lesbian feet out of my shoes.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, okay, so
well, she's also, she's problematic in other ways, because she does a few microaggressions toward Jess, where, like, whenever she first meets Jess when they're in, like, Jules's room, she learns her name and she's like, oh, Jess, is that Indian? Basically saying, like, that doesn't sound like an Indian name. Like, what? I don't understand. And then she says something like, I hope you teach my daughter a bit about your culture, you know, to respect your elders. And then she says, oh, you're a lucky girl, because I expect that your parents are fixing you up with a handsome young doctor soon, aren't they? So just like taking stereotypes that she knows about Indian culture and just assuming that they apply to Jess. And this is an example of a time where, like, Jess doesn't challenge it, but it makes perfect sense why. Like, you don't want to, like, your friend whose mom you just met, you're not going to, like, necessarily stand up and be like, actually, here's all the things that are problematic about everything you just said. So that, like, tracked for me, but it just, like, I mean, this is all to say that I think all the characters in this movie are, like, characterized very well. They feel like real people. Thought and time was put into developing them. So even though, like, Jules's mom is problematic in many ways, the movie handles it in such a way where we, the audience, realize what she's saying is problematic.
Yeah.
Where in a lot of movies, that care and time isn't bothered with at all. So, I mean, there are people like her, like Jules's mom, like, we've met them. But yeah, it's just, I find it interesting that each of these characters, problematic though they may be, are still developed in such a way by, like, the writers that they're used to, like, demonstrate the biases and the microaggressions and stuff like that a character or a person like Jess would experience. So I thought that was all handled very well. Let's take a quick break. I have to go score some more goals, and then we'll be right back.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies, so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty.
Well, I don't know about you, but like I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the, I mean, I don't have that much to say because I'm not super critical of it, but just saying that the team dynamic inside of the team that Joe coaches, that Jess and Jules are a part of, is like a really positive community. They're all generally very supportive of each other. They'll like dig at each other sometimes, but it's in a very friendly way most of the time. There's a scene that I really liked where Mel, the captain of the team, Jules, and a few other teammates ask Jess questions about her culture because they just don't know. Like, they don't understand why is she not allowed to play soccer? Why, like what are the culture's rules around dating? Like, they just don't know. So they ask in a way that I thought, and I mean, I'm not totally, but it seemed like a very respectful conversation. They asked respectfully, she answered, and they're like, oh, okay, we know. And I was like, that's great. That seems like how that should go.
Right. Especially when you contrast that with how Jules's mom approaches those same sort of topics, where she's like making assumptions and then being like, well, this is how it must be for you. Yeah. So I already know everything and I don't need to ask questions because I got this. And it's just like, yeah. So I think I agree that I think those were handled better, and I enjoyed that scene. I also like the scene where she has to get back to her wedding, her sister's wedding at the end, so her teammates are helping her put on like the sari.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how to wear one of those things.
But everyone on the team did.
So funny.
At that point, I was like, actually, I didn't even think of that.
My mom has to put it on me.
Oh. That's sweet, though. That's nice.
It feels weird as an adult to have your mom come behind you because she has to put it on like she's putting it on. That's how she knows. Like, you know how some people have to tie.
Yeah.
So it's just a very like pottery scene from Ghost where my mom is just wrapping her arms around me and like folding a sari into me. I was like, this is uncomfortable. I don't want this.
That's great.
Oh, that's a beautiful image. Just ghosting with your own mom with the same song playing in the background the whole
bit. Right.
Fully unchained melody.
Another thing I wanted to talk about is this is a movie about women's sports, a woman in sports.
Goals.
And
kicking, penalty.
This is to say that there are not that many movies about female athletes, women playing sports. A few examples include, aside from Bend It Like Beckham, A League of Their Own, Stick It, Bring It On, Whip It. A lot of them have it in the name.
Because you get it. Well, I guess if you replace it with her, that would be bad.
No.
Yeah.
That would be bad. Never mind. I rescind my
it. It
my
being
comment.
The sport or the...
The ball.
The ball.
Caitlin, sports. Right.
Oh, Gotta Kick It Up is another one. And then
the
we've
ball.
Got like
yeah.
Blue Crush, Million Dollar Baby, Girl Fight, Love and Basketball, She's the Man, I, Tonya. And then a few lesser known ones that I found out via a very thorough Google search, like Gracie, Personal Best, Ice Princess, The Cutting Edge.
Ice Princess rules. What are you
talking
about?
I don't.
Lesser known.
Well, if these are like Disney Channel originals, which I feel like some of these are, I don't know what they are. Mm. Double Team is another one.
It's a great one.
So this is like roughly 20 movies throughout the course of history that are well known enough that they show up in a Google search versus like 8,000 movies about men playing sports. So, yeah. I mean, we see this all the time where like biopics, 90% of them are about men, much fewer are about women.
Yeah.
You know, movies about the military, almost all of them feature male characters, none of them are about women in the military. So it's like...
And that's a media issue where I feel like the counter argument that I can hear my cousin saying is like, well, people don't watch women's sports as much. But that is like snake eating its own tail.
Not a
right.
game, it's a movie. I'm not... Bend It Like Beckham wasn't just like a filmed soccer match.
Right. And it's like if young women don't see female athletes depicted on screen in the like celebratory way that it is in Bend It Like Beckham when they're younger, then they're probably less likely to want to play that sport. Like, that's a proven thing over and over. Why do so many little girls want to be princesses? Because that's what they see. Mm-hmm. And so it's like if they see other stuff, then of course, you know, the cultural landscape will gradually shift. And so maybe I wouldn't hate sports balls so much if there were movies of women doing it more. We'll never
know. I too would have liked hoop goals more if I had been exposed.
I would have been slamming hoop goals. I've been kicking the basketball.
Gotta kick it up.
Gotta kick that basketball up into the air for crying out loud.
Also, a lot of the movies that I named are about sports that I would say are at least perceived to be more feminine, because it's either dancing, figure skating, gymnastics.
A couple of them are like female dominated sports.
Right. A couple of them are like League of Their Own is baseball. A couple of them are about boxing. Some of them are about basketball. But yeah, I feel like if you're going to have a mainstream movie about women doing a sport that is commercially successful, chances are it's like cheerleading or like figure skating or something that we as a society already are okay with women doing. I think the ones like Bend It Like Beckham or A League of Their Own are more outliers. Like, even though they were, you know, they're popular movies, they hold up, but they're not the rule. So I don't know. Yeah, I think I tend to not like sports movies very much, especially like nothing will ever make me enjoy a boxing movie, except I did really enjoy Girl Fight.
I like sports and movies and shit. Maybe it's because I grew up watching it.
Sure.
But honestly, I was thinking about it. Have there been more movies about dogs in sports because of all of the Air Bud sequels? Like, women in sports.
Oh my God. I bet there are more Air Bud movies than there are movies featuring female athletes.
I've for sure seen a movie about a monkey playing hockey called MVP, Most Valuable Primate. More than I've seen movies about women playing sports. That said, highly recommend.
Those primates are going to grow up to play hockey because they got exposed to it.
I mean, and that's why there's so many professional monkey hockey players right now, because media is influential. I keep saying it. It is a 2000 feature film that sparked the MVP franchise. The film's title character, Jack, is a chimpanzee. What else does he play in future movies? Oh my God. Okay. Okay. MVP 2 is skateboarding, most vertical primate.
What?
And then the last one is X Games themed, most extreme primate. That's MXP. It's kind of a different.
Oh, I see.
But it's the third one. We already know it's a proven product.
Jumped the shark with that one.
Okay. Well, now. Oh, and it is an extension of the Air Bud franchise. That makes sense.
Well, thank goodness for, you know, animals in sports and all the representation that they get.
True.
I wanted to talk about the love triangle.
Yeah.
I would argue that it kind of has no place in this movie. I don't like that it's there. I get why it's there. It's a way to heighten the tension of the story and to introduce more conflict. But to me, it just kind of cheapens the whole narrative because... So it's Joe is their coach. They both develop an interest in him, which to me makes sense. You know, he's cute. He's respectful of them. He, like, if you watch Million Dollar Baby, Clint Eastwood is over here being like, I don't teach girls because I don't think they're people. And I feel like a similar thing happens in Girl Fight, where like male sporty mentors are like reluctant to teach girls how to sport. But in this movie, he's just like, yep, this is my job and I'm fine with it and I'm respectful of all the women on this team. So that was nice to see. So at least it tracks why they would be interested in him, because he's, you know, nice to them and he's respectful of them. But they both have a crush on him, and it drives a wedge between their friendship, which is like has just become such a lazy writing move.
Yeah, it just it's not even like the Joe character that I had a particular issue with. I thought it was like in some ways positive to see a man fully comfortable with and acknowledging the skills of a woman is equal to his own. Like, I think that there was like that's a generally good thing to see, especially in a sports movie, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, they're all the scenes between Jess and Jules, they just felt like a little weird. Of like, I don't know if they're like that whole Keira Knightley bursting onto a balcony and going, "You bitch!"
I was
like, oh man. And also, I'm like, would Jess have kissed her coach at a club? I mean, maybe, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It did feel like a little cheap. And with the wide array of things that, like, issues this movie addresses, there's also more, I think, interesting from a story point, more interesting things for them to have been in conflict about.
I kind of liked it just because I've seen that happen with my friends.
Sure.
A couple of times, like two good girlfriends in college, like got into the, like, almost the exact parallel situation. And just like, this is going to sound however it's going to sound, but like, when you're not what's represented as a standard of beauty, I would say, and you don't know how to, like, I didn't know how to make my body attractive, you know, especially like previously having been overweight. And then, like, if you're Indian, you've got all this hair coming in and you don't know how to get rid of it because your mom's like, who's seeing you anyway? And I'm like, everyone, mom, everyone. I'm in a goddamn locker room. Help me. Such a nightmare. And like being super self-conscious about my body. And then like this weird thing at the end where it's like the coach picks the brown girl. Like, to me, it like blew my mind. Where I was like, yeah, get it, bitch. Like, I just
that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. Yeah,
I did appreciate that. I liked that, you know, you see like an interracial romantic relationship represented in a positive way. It shouldn't be groundbreaking for film, but it kind of was. But I guess what I didn't like is that the fact that these two women are in conflict with each other over a man.
Yeah,
that's the part of it that kind of bugged me. And but again, I mean, it's those things do play out in real life all the time where so it's not unheard of, or it's not even that it's unrealistic, but I think it was just an easy choice where, like, Jamie, what you said, with all the other things that this movie explores in terms of, like, you know, just being one of the few women of color on this team of mostly white girls, you know, the pressure of her family. There's, like, sources of conflict
Jules's
coming at her
mom
from
is, like,
every
racist
direction.
Towards Jess a bunch of times, and Jules never really says anything.
Right.
Like,
how that triangle was shoehorned in, though, is a bit odd.
Yeah. I don't know if it was, like, a studio note to, like, we need more drama or something like that. But, I just feel that it was a little unnecessary. Yeah. I think that there was enough sources of tension and conflict in the movie already that didn't need to be there.
Limitless, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Really quick on the Pinky character, because I like the relationship that Jess has with her sister, too, that felt like... Pinky, I feel like, is that's Jess's older sister who's getting married. I feel like she's, like, a little more cartoony than most of the characters we came across in this movie, where, like, she's a very big personality, but, like, at the same time, and she reminds me of my cousin a lot, where she's, like, this big personality and, like, doesn't have a filter, but also is kind of traditional in the way she's, like, choosing to go about her life, where she is getting married to someone her parents approve of. She loves him. It's what she wants to do. This is the life she wants. And then she's also, like, super loud and very opinionated. And there's a lot of different elements of her parents seem to approve of Pinky's choices more than they do of Jess's.
Oh, for sure.
But also Pinky is, like, by far the more outgoing. And, like, Pinky and Jess are in conflict a number of times in this movie. One time when Pinky's fiance's family thinks that Jess is gay and then cancel the wedding. And then, to be fair, I mean, one of the good things I liked about Jess's family is they do, like, acknowledge that she is a generally honest person and believe her when she's like, no, that's, they misunderstood. That's not what was happening. And they're like, okay, well, you're honest and they fucked up. But Pinky is so mad. Mm-hmm. But later on, that's resolved. And Pinky helps Jess sneak away and play soccer a couple different times.
Yeah, she covers for her a lot.
Yeah. And but it's
my brother
still...
would have ratted me out in a goddamn heartbeat. Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, did he know you were doing comedy
no.
stuff? Oh, man. Who knew?
My best friend in high school and then a couple of, you know, closer friends on high school.
Okay. Yeah. So, but, like, no one inside the family?
Oh, no.
Wow.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so I guess Pinky's not as much of a narc as your brother would have been. Because Pinky, I mean, but she is kind of selectively, she's like the kind of character that as long as like what Jess is doing is not in conflict with what she wants, she'll go along with it.
Yeah.
But if something, like if Jess's soccer got in the way of her wedding, which it does, Pinky's like, no, you're coming to my wedding. Like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And the whole third act of the movie is like, or like the very end, where Jess goes to the wedding, then the soccer game, then the wedding again, is done. I forgot exactly how that like sequence plays out, but it's Jess basically decides, no, I'm going with like the duty I feel towards my family. I'm going to the wedding. Mm-hmm. And her dad is pushing for that because there's like that whole phone scene where Jess is like, that's the day of my game. And he's like, shh, you know, you're going to the wedding. And then Tony is the one who's like, you have to go in soccer and blah, blah, blah. And Jess is like, I can't. And then Jess's dad comes in and he's like, what's going on? And Tony's like, soccer. And then Jess's dad is the one who's like, soccer.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And so her dad is the one who's hiding that Jess is gone from both her sister and her mother until Jess gets back. There is an element of, and it did, again, it's like this movie does so well generally that it's like not the biggest deal, but if we're getting like nitpicky, both Jess's dad and Jules's dad end up for their respective storylines being the good guy of the family, which is kind of a trope I feel like comes up. I can't think of it, but like there is, you know, like the mothers of both of those families are the stricter ones. They're harder on their daughters. They're more critical of them. Mm-hmm. The dads are critical and will back the moms up, but are usually the ones who go behind the scenes and are like, but it's okay. I'm the nice one.
Yeah. Right.
And that happens with, I mean, Jules' dad, I don't think at any point is made to seem strict in any way. He's just like, soccer rules.
Yeah. In fact, he says something like, you know, if our daughter is more interested in playing football than chasing boys, I'm over the moon about that, which, you know, is, we can unpack that where it's like, well, what if she did want to chase boys and, you know, explore her sexuality? What's wrong with that, Dad? But, right.
But, like, his character is, like, I mean, he's barely a character. At least Jess's dad, we get some context at the end.
Why he feels how he feels.
Yeah.
Right, because he was really cool. Was it a cricket player?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that the story gives him a little bit more context for why he's sort of trying to protect her.
Right.
And things like that. Because he also had experienced a lot of racism when he tried to play cricket.
They kicked him out because he was brown.
Yeah, I noticed that, too, about the parents, that both of the mothers were way less chill. Just, like, were trying to either, like, suppress their daughters in some way where they, like, you can't play soccer, or trying to, like, force an idea of femininity onto them. I feel like they were extra upset when, because both families at one point or another think that their daughter is queer with the other character. Mm. And yeah, the way like Jules' mom handles it, there's like, she crashes the wedding, like you said, like screams about shoes. And then there's that scene after that in the car where she's like, you know, you're a lesbian. And she's like, just because I wear khakis and play sport doesn't make me a lesbian. But, like, also, Jules's tone during that scene is a little problematic.
It's very 2002.
Yeah.
The way that scene plays out. Yeah, because then she says, like, there's, like, a pause. And once Jules's mom realizes, and this happens with both families, once they realize that their daughters aren't gay, they're like, oh, gay people are fine.
It's, this is another story I shouldn't tell. I'm gonna make it real quick. I was in high school, and like there was this girl bullying my friend by like spreading rumors about her being a lesbian. Mm. So I thought it would be funny if I came on to her because she was homophobic. So I did that. And then it turns out it wasn't just her that was homophobic. It was a whole bunch of people that were homophobic.
No!
And so I accidentally got myself semi-gay bashed when I was walking down the hallway. And I was like, I'm not actually gay.
That is such a high school thing.
I just think you're shitty.
Yeah.
That is such a high school thing to happen, too. Of like, I know what I'll do. And then it's like, no, everyone's hateful. Everyone hates everybody here. This is a help it.
I was like, oh, no. Oh,
God, that's the worst. The way that scene with Jess and her mom, at the end, it is kind of like played for laughs where, Jules and her mom, not Jess. Too many J names. But, you know, Jules says, besides, being a lesbian, it's not that big a deal. And then her mom is, you know, goes full hypocrite when she realizes her daughter is straight, thank God, is she's like, oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. And they're all like, tee-hee-hee-hee, yeah. We're straight. And then they just like... but then, oh, so the last thing I wanted to talk about was, so the way they deal with female queerness, this movie... comes out in a weird place.
Uh-huh.
It's not totally bad, but it's weird.
Sure.
It's not fully accepted. But we also have Tony, mm-hmm. who is a queer male character.
Yes.
Who I forgot about his storyline, but it is, I feel like it is fully realized within the movie. There's just so much mm-hmm. going on. But
yeah.
Tony is the one boy on the soccer team that Jess plays on at the beginning, mm-hmm. Who is not horrible to her.
Right.
And is nice to her, and they get along, and everyone thinks he has a crush on her, but it turns out he just respects her.
Right.
The twist is he's gay and he respects her. Right. So, I mean, I liked that scene where he, mm-hmm. you know, and Jess is being like, you know where she's coming from, and she's like kind of grasping at straws and just like wants to stop disappointing her family. And she's like, so do you like me? We should just get married.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in a way that if Tony were interested in her would probably have been very hurtful of like, well, I've decided to settle. Here I am. I've right. done it. But then Tony is like, no, I just respect you. Also,
yeah,
I'm gay. That scene, I mean, Jess is like, oh, that's, you know, she's fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then there,
but she's the only character, as far as we know, who knows about him being gay. He's the only person that he comes out to. So I think that if
yeah.
more people, like in Jess's community, knew about it, I feel like the movie might have handled it similarly to how, like, female queerness
point.
Is perceived. So I think in general, yeah, I mean, it's. This is like characters in 2002 responding to queerness in the way that a lot of people in 2002 would have responded to that. But yeah, I think it's interesting and positive that Jess is still very respectful of him. And, you know, he comes out to her and she's just like, great. It doesn't change their friendship at all or anything like that. Like, yeah, I thought that all was handled very well.
Yeah. And then there's the last minute scene with him where he says, because he is so supportive of Jess's soccer career and doesn't think that her parents will ever support it. And so he's like, I'll marry her. You know, in the mm-hmm, last scene, mm-hmm. he's like, I'll marry her. And I was so nervous because 2002, I was so nervous that she was going to out him.
Same, same.
I was like, felt yeah. so, I was like, oh my God, I feel like in 2002, people wouldn't have thought of as much of that. But she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
She just says, nice try, Tony. Like, I need to tell the truth. And then she tells the truth about herself. I was just, there was a moment where I was like, oh my God, if she adds him, I'll be so sad.
Same.
But she doesn't.
Yeah.
Another win. Right. Another win for the movie.
Another character doing a just basic decency.
Basic respect.
Basic wins decency the day. On camera. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
His character also, like the big tournament at the end, all of the guys that she had been playing with in the park show up to that game to watch. Most of them are like, you know, very toxic masculinity bros. And they're like, oh, women playing soccer, their boobs. And oh, how do they even do it? And they're like, just like really over sexualizing and objectifying all the players on the team. And Tony says something like, can't you just see them as footballers? Like, again, feminist icon, queer icon. But an earlier scene shows a bunch of Pinky's friends watching the men play soccer in the park and them similarly objectifying them and like, oh, look at his like six pack. And yeah, I want to wank him off.
And then Jess calls them a bunch of sluts.
Yeah. She,
which, sorry, I did laugh at.
But yeah, she does slut shame her sister's friends, which, you know, is not the best thing that's ever happened. It's not the worst thing that's ever happened.
It feels so bad when you think someone's like on your level of creep. Like, there was a hot bartender at the bottom of this theater, and I turned to another girl and I was like, that dude is so smoking hot. I would totally fuck him. And then she was just like, ew. And I was like, oh no. And you're like, oh no.
That is literally every time I'm like, I have a crush on someone. And then Caitlin's like, show me a picture. And then I do. And then she's like, okay. I was like, I need to die now. I just run into traffic and get hit by a car.
I'm sorry.
I've gotten so many tepid okays from you when I hit you with the visual. It's so unchill.
We'll post it on our Instagram.
No, I don't. I'm never going to show you anyone ever again. Okay. Ever.
Well, you know what? We all, taste is subjective, and you can like whoever you want.
Mine's kind of bad. I'll say it. Mine's weird. It's all over the place.
Does anyone have any other thoughts about the movie, Bend It Like Beckham? Interesting that a movie about women playing sports does have a title where a man's name is in the title.
Oh, yeah. Is that really him at the end? That cameo?
Yeah, I think so, right?
Is it
him and Victoria? I feel like they get, like, archived footage or something. I don't know. It's a hologram. I do want to say that there is a clip of Mia Hamm playing soccer in the movie. And
the clip of Mia Hamm playing soccer, yeah.
She and I share the same birthday, May 17th, so we are sisters. Twins. We're twin sisters.
My birthday twin is Patrick Swayze. Yes.
Yeah, I guess overall, like, I like this movie a whole lot, just on a base level of it being, like, a fun, entertaining movie, and then also, you know, watching it through the Bechdel cast lens, I really enjoy that it explores a lot of different things that we tend to talk about movies not paying any attention to. So the fact that this movie addresses, like, the concept of femininity and different things about sexuality, different things about racism and all kinds of things that most movies just completely gloss over or don't pay any attention to or don't care about addressing. I really like all of that. And I like that it's effectively about a woman who is kind of, she's got a struggle where she wants to pay respect to her family and honor them and their wishes, but also has the agency to, like, do her own thing, and to, she wants to pursue her own goals and make her own choices. But yeah, it's just, I think it's a great movie where, you know, women are driving the narrative. Women are challenging different things. Women have agency. Women are kicking ass and kicking balls.
Ooh, goal!
I did a goal. So yeah, I don't know. And then,
really quick, does this movie pass the Bechdel test? One, two, three, yes! We don't even need to get into citing specific scenes because it's basically, if there are two women talking in the movie, almost every significant female pairing in this movie, it passes at one point. And usually, especially between Jess and Jules, passes significantly because they talk about they won't stop talking about soccer.
Jess and her sister Pinky, Jess and her mom.
Jules and her mom.
Yeah.
Jess and Jules' mom. Every possible.
Lots of combos.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
I'm always on the lookout for movies that pass all four of the following tests. The Bechdel test, the DuVernay test, the Vito Russo test, and the Mako Mori test. This movie passes all four.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Because you've got a woman of color.
Test really quick.
So Bechdel test we've already discussed.
Yes.
The DuVernay test requires that characters who are people of color have fully realized lives rather than serve as scenery for white stories. So this movie passes that test with flying colors. The Mako Mori test requires that there's at least one prominent female character who has her own narrative arc, which is not about supporting a man's story, passes that test with flying colors. The Vito Russo test, the movie passes if it contains a character that is identifiably LGBTQ. So we've got that in Tony. Character is not solely or predominantly defined by their sexual orientation or gender identity, which I would say is true for Tony too.
For sure.
And this is where it gets a little tricky. The character must be tied into the plot in such a way that their removal would have a significant effect.
I think so. Because
for Tony, he argues for her. And
that's,
like,
true.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one that, like, makes her at the end of the wedding. He's pivotal to that.
Yeah. True. Yeah, he encourages her. And then, right. Okay. Yeah. So it passes all four tests. Hurrah!
Best movie ever!
Well, with that, let's rate it on our nipple scale. Well, we rate the movie based on its portrayal of women, 0 to 5 nipples. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this, like, a 4.5,
that's
I think.
That's a good idea.
I think certain characters and how they handle the topic of queerness, specifically Jules and Jules's mom, I think could be handled a little bit better. And I think if this movie was rewritten today, those problems would be solved, because this is an extremely progressive movie.
And there's also a few, I feel like I should have said earlier, there are a few queer slurs that go unchallenged in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where the racial slurs are challenged,
mm-hmm.
the queer slurs are not.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then also, like, a half nipple off for the fact that the movie has this love triangle that doesn't need to be there. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it just kind of cheapens it a little bit. But overall, it's really cool to see a movie about a woman of color. We get all the context of her family. Great movie, great characters. Female characters are very well written and well developed. We so rarely see this. The fact that it's written and directed by an Indian woman is amazing. I'm so glad that this movie exists. And if you haven't seen it, check it out ASAP. So 4.5 nipples. I'm going to give 2 to Jess, 1 to Jules, 1 to Pinky, and 0.5 nipple to Tony.
Cool. I'll go with 4.5 as well. Let me see if I can do this in sports terms.
Okay.
I'd say this soccer ball fumbles female queerness, but really dunks in every other regard.
Wow.
Time out. I like this movie. The only penalty would be what I already said was a fumble. In conclusion, now I'm canceling.
Oh, we're in overtime now.
And overtime, fifth quarter. I would say that, in all seriousness, when I saw this movie when I was a teenager, demonstrates the importance of portraying every culture possible in film and in mainstream film, because I know I for sure didn't grow up around many Indian people at all, and I learned stuff from this movie. Mm-hmm. And this was my first exposure to a culture I wasn't familiar with, and it's done so responsibly and respectfully that I think if more cultures were portrayed in this way in film, the world would just be a better place.
Yeah.
I really like this movie, and I'm happy that we can keep watching it and feeling happy about watching it without feeling guilty about watching it.
Yeah.
So 4.5 nipples, giving 2 to Jess. I'll give 1 to Jules. I'll give 1 to Pinky, and then I'll give my last 0.5 to Jess's mom, because I like her a lot.
Yeah.
I would say, well, I'm going to be biased, so I'm going to give 4.8 nipples.
Okay, yeah, love it.
I'm going to give it a handicap for the time period, just because this is the first movie where I got to see someone represent what it feels like my story on mm-hmm. screen. And mm-hmm. it was everything to me, you know? Like,
yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Just the coolest movie, and I loved it, like, top to bottom, you know?
Yeah.
I also want to see your exact story on screen, because it sounds right. Like that would be such a fun movie to watch. Wait, who are you giving your nips to?
I'll give 2 to Jess, 1 to her mom, 1 to Keira Knightley. How much does that leave me? So 2, and then I have 0.8.
0.8 left.
I have 0.8 left. I'll give 0.8 to Tony, you know, because yeah. he was like a great character who like, feminist icon, queer icon, mm-hmm. killing it.
He's killing it. Give us a Tony spinoff series.
Where is it?
Yeah. Where is it?
Well, Supa, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This was so much fun.
Yay. Where can people find you online? Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, sure. They can find me on Twitter at Suba, SUBHAH. And my Instagram, I'm sorry, is at Subhaha. It's SUBHAHA.
You love had it. To do it to
him. You had to. I had to. Was a choice that I refused to take back. And Saturday at 7 p.m., there's a show at the Hollywood Improv. It's the writers of the Jim Jefferies show, so you should come to that.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
Very nice. Great. You can follow the Bechdelcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can go to our website, bechdelcast.com. You can rate and review us on iTunes.
Please.
Give us 5 nips. Give us a goal. Score a bunch of goals on us or for us. I don't know.
Or dunk on us.
Dunk.
No, please don't dunk on us. We're trying so hard.
Yeah. basically give us 5 stars is what we're saying. And you can subscribe to our Patreon. It is $5 a month and you get 2 bonus episodes every single month.
This month we have Incredibles 2 coming out soon.
Yes.
So enjoy that.
Yes, please do. Yeah. And otherwise, goal!
Penalty, scoring in overtime. Bye!
Bye!
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my, look at that, he is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.